Today is Sunday, December 6th, 2020. It's a cold but quite beautiful here in Yerushalayim. The sun is shining, so it's a Shavua Tov. Tomorrow is a big day for all of us. It's December 7th, and that should remind you of what happened December 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor. And Be'ezrat Hashem, by the end of the week, we'll be celebrating our victory, Hanukkah. I just want to mention a number of past matters. Number one, if you recall, we spoke about in the Sunday class the ne'emanut of medical doctors. And I have to say that Rav Asher Weiss, in his Quintus for this past week, Parshat Vayishlach, goes in to a tremendous discussion of all the areas. It's based upon a Rashi, Chazal, that the Esav, the children that are listed out, some of them were experts on the ground and knew what you plant, what the seed should be, what will get the best results. And that raises the whole question, can you depend upon a non-Jew to be an expert? And he goes in from medicine to many, many other topics. Very, very fascinating. Halacha l'maisa, what we said is correct, and umnen l'morel umnato, we can depend upon someone who is an expert. He's going to be honest. Jack asked me in relation to I've said over the years that Friday night, after Shmoneh Esrei, so the Chasson says Magen Avot, and I said the Rav had a very deep insight there. To just mention it in one sentence, the Rav felt that it was a tikkun of Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, that Friday night, unlike any other davening, we have Ke'en Chazaret HaShatz. What's missing are the first three brachas, the last three brachas, but the heart of Ke'en HaMahora, the heart of what Friday night is about, is right there in the Magen Avot. And to a certain degree, you should be very, very careful when you daven with the minyan. It's like the Chazaret HaShatz of any other time you have the minyan, which gives it an added status and more insight into Friday night. Mark Wiener, Rabbi Wiener, in relation to what we spoke about, you mentioned Kliach Yad, the whole problem of inviting non-Jews to a Yontif meal. So he mentions that in the chaplaincy, this was a very big problem on Sukkos, because many intelligent, erudite non-Jews, chaplains or high-ranking officers, wanted to see what the sukkah is about and wanted to join the Jews. Also, with the Seder, it's well known that many a non-Jew has participated in the Seder. And this is a difficult halachic problem. Halacha l'maisa, I think what they're samachan l'hakel, if the food is all...
Randy, you're breaking up every so often. It seems the network is dropping.
Oh, is there anything we can do at this end? Wow. Yomo? You almost
I don't know what you have.
we have the usual, I'm speaking into the microphone, and are you hearing me now? Are you hearing
Now
me?
we hear you, but every so often, for 2 or 3 seconds, you stop.
Yomo, anything we can do? Yomo is shaking his head no, that there's nothing we can do. It's the network, it's not the everything at this end has been improved, and I see you all on the screen. I never a dull moment. All right, let me.
All right.
If it gets very bad, you'll advise what to do, if there's any etza. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me? Shake your head, yes?
Yes, we
Yeah,
hear you.
okay. So it's really a.
Yes, we hear you.
It's really, thank you. It's really a problem. And the truth is that if an area that right Gentile wants to come, I mean, there are tshuvot on this. I can't go into more detail. The whole concept of teaching Torah to Goyim, there's a very famous tshuva from the Shri Deyesh. Others have dealt with it. But halacha l'maisa, Steve Ressler, invites people. I imagine that he's not cooking on Yontif. He's done the cooking before. He knows what he has to serve. He's not going to add, even if a few extra people walk in. He's a chef par excellence. You all know, published a cookbook. So I imagine that that's what the heter is based upon. I know Rav Gorin dealt with it. He had the American ambassador. And since it was catered food, everything is prepared and brought in before. It's just heated up on Yontif. But it's not that you're mabeb sheyurim because you invited a non-Jew. But I understand the problem. It's delicate, and yeah, we have to deal with the achronim. But I would imagine the thought I'm expressing is the way to go. Regarding last week's shir and the lulav and the sukkah and the Rebbe, I want to thank Shmuley Zirkin, sent me in a whole explanation, but I don't want to go into it because it's Hasidic terminology, which, as you all understand, today is Ishru Chag. Yesterday was Yutet Kislev, Rosh Hashanah LeChassidut. And what Chabad introduced, of course they'll claim it goes back to the Zohar, Kabbalah, yes, but Chabad really formalized it. It's an entire new vocabulary that we Litvakin were not raised on. We were raised on Reb Chaim, Chefetz and Gavra. They already were raised Pinimiyut, Chitzoniyut, and all that goes with it, the Makif, the Orot. And it's a very nice explanation, but it's not what I said. What I spoke about, the merger of the two, the synthesis, Chag HaShavuot, Chag HaPesach, merging into one, that's my vort. The Rebbe has something much more Hasidic. Jack also mentioned that the Kabbalah has a great impact in Israel, and the example that I've given throughout the millennium is everyone does not put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed, and this is an unbelievable achievement. However, as I said, I'm not certain this is all because of Kabbalah. It has to do with Lamedus too, as I explained last week. I also want to quote the fascinating story we spoke about, our lack of understanding of the Hasidic world, Rabbi Yerucham Gerelich, Rabbi Noach Bornstein, and Nachum Lam writes, he recalls his sister married Hirschat, the son of my classmate, Dr. Yasha Hirschat. As you know, Dr. Hirschat is a great cancer specialist, and he's revered in Torah circles for what he's done for people, Rebbeim. And at this wedding, the Bava Vareba sent his brother, or he thinks it's the Bava Vareba, sent his brother to get the last or sixth bracha of Big Kibbud. I didn't get it. I said to my father, quote, but if Dr. Hirschat provides services for them, shouldn't they give him the Kibbud at their wedding? Why is it covered for him to give the Rebbe's representative a covered at his son's wedding? My father sighed and said, quote, Oy Nachum, you'll never understand Hasidus, end quote. And Nachum adds, no, I guess I won't. Okay. Finally, I want to make a correction. It's a minor correction, but nevertheless, it's a correction. And I thank Dr. Bill Gvirtz. Over the years, I've often said that the Chazon Ish and the Rav Shaul Liebman were first cousins. That's what I read, that their mothers were sisters. I'm off by one generation. They were first cousins once removed. Rav Shaul Lieberman's grandmother and the Chazon Ish's mother, they were sisters. So that makes the Chazon Ish a first cousin to Professor Liebman's mother, and it makes them a first cousin once removed. It's sort of like the relationship between Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, Reb Moshe Feinstein, and the Rav. Okay, now let's roll. So what we said last time, it was a very important shir because I dealt with the difference between a Hasidic outlook, a Kabbalistic outlook, and a Litvisha outlook. And that shiva where the the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and you're talking about a gon olam. The Lubavitcher Rebbe was Nukala Torah Kula b'yalpeh. That we all saw with our own eyes. I don't have to quote the Rav. The Rav was amazed by it. I saw it many times. You'd go to a Fabrengen, and the Rebbe could speak on Yutket Kislev for hours and hours, and he held no notes in front of him, no sparim in front of him. Everything was Baal Peh, Shas and Paiskim. And then when he did the Maim Chassidus, he would stand up, and his eyes closed, and he wasn't looking at any sources. In his hand, he held a handkerchief. We lectured about this years ago. The handkerchief was to keep him on earth, that he shouldn't float into outer space when he was saying the var Chassidus, he knew everything by heart. But when it came to this question of sleeping in the sukkah, so you see a tshuva that a litvak is hard to understand it. The Rebbe feels bad, he can't sleep in the sukkah because he's overwhelmed by the rays of God. And the chassid feels bad that he's overwhelmed by the fact that he is not overwhelmed by the rays of the Ribbono Shel Olam like the Rebbe. He's not on the level of the Rebbe. And both of them are mitztayer for different reasons, but halacha lemaisa, they don't sleep in the sukkah. All right, that's a Hasidic teretz. The Litvisha mind will not accept it. But now you come to the Mishnah halacha chelek yud simin ayin gimel, and I introduced it last week. We'll pick up where we left off. And the Blush of the Rebbe, this is the Blush of the Rebbe who we spoke about. And you see that the Rebbe Menashe Klein is standing before the Blush of the Rebbe, Dechilu Rechimu, shaking. And the Rebbe asks him a simple question, that the lights went out in the sukkah, I don't know if this is his sukkah, but someone asked him the question, Misha Yoshev B'sukkah, and he can't learn anymore. You can't see the Svarim. It's dark, and there's no way to get the lights on again. It's Yontif, you can't turn it on, and there's no guy nearby, no Shabbos guy. And he asked the Reb Menashe Klein, who has Hasidic understanding, is it better to sit in the sukkah in the dark and not learn and just close your eyes and take in the fact that you're in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Anani Kavod, the rays that are emanating from the Ribbono Shel Olam? Or should you go into your house and sit down and learn where there's light? And as I showed you, it's an open halacha. Very simple in the Shulchan Aruch. You don't have to go any further. We're off here. Is this okay? What's happening?
No.
Oh God. Let me just pick up. It's an open halacha that kol shivat hayamim korei v'lomei b'toch hasukkah, plain and simple. And if something should happen, the halacha continues, then you're allowed to leave. Daitomi Yushevet, but if the lights go out, Abadi, you have to leave the sukkah. Okay, so it's an open halacha. And the truth of the matter is, had Aaron Rakefet asked this question, Reb Menashe Klein would have answered, what are you, an Amar Tzibur in any Reichet? You don't know an open halacha? Of course you have to leave the sukkah. But this is the Bulls of a Rebbe speaking. And even though he quotes the halacha, he quotes the Shulchan Aruch, he says, it would appear to me that this is halacha, and he quotes it, and he gives you the source. But then he says, it's the Blush of a Rebbe asking, so he's not going to just answer, yes, leave the sukkah. He says, in honor of the Blush of a Rebbe, Kedei L'Hishtateya, that he wants to have, to enjoy Malat Kavod Kedushato B'Divrei Torah, let us engage in some Divrei Torah. So he says, let me say a Chiddush on the Sinyan, and he's, look at the deference to the Rebbe, he says, V'yatmalat kavod kedushato mishpat ha-bechora l'karev ol rachek. And you're the one, you're in charge, you can accept it, or tell me I'm wrong. Whatever you say, I will accept. And let me show you what the Mishnah Lachat gets involved with. And I'll show you a question that the Achronim deal with. And Halacha Lamaisa, it all depends on this, we'll call it his pilpul, and the way he gets involved with the Chepetz Gavra, two different ideas, Shnei Dinim. And it all begins with the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Chaf Chet Amid Bet. And it's an open Mishnah, Kol Shivat HaYamim Adam Oseh Sukkato Keva Ubeito Arai. All right, we know that Sukkahs, that's where you have to live, in the Sukkah. The Gemara says, Tona Rabbanan, Kol Shivat HaYamim Adam Oseh Sukkato Keva Ubeito Arai Ketzad. Hayulo Kelim Naim Malim L'Sukkah. Matzaot not, malan l'sukkah, ochel v'shotel, mitayel b'sukkah. All right, you have a whole description of how you have to live. Your finest utensils, beautiful glasses. The truth is, none of us do this. What do we do in a sukkah? It's all plastic today. But on Malamit Zchut and Klal Yisrael, the plastic we use already, I have plastic for during the week and plastic for Shabbos. During the year we use dishes on Shabbos. But when we're out in the sukkah, my daughter's sukkah, the plastic today is so beautiful, you basically can't tell the difference. It's special, it's more expensive. They have plastic silverware that looks like it's gold-plated. So it could be after Melamed Zchut and Klal Yisrael that this is beautiful, this is what we use in the sukkah, and everything we do, we have to take our beds, we have to take, if you have a nice chair to sit on, everything should be in the sukkah. All right, how do we know this, the Gemara asked? The Tana Rabbanan Teshvu Ke'en Taduru. Mikan amru kol shivat hayamim oseh adam sukkato keva ubeito arai. Ketzad hayu lo keilim naim malim l'sukkah matzot not malim l'sukkah ochel v'shoteh mitayel b'sukkah umishanim b'sukkah. Wow, it's from the pasuk b'sukkot lashen taduru. Lashon Dira, you have to live in the sukkah like you live in your house. You eat, you drink, you sleep, you sit. Everything you would do in the house, you walk around, the person's on the phone. They walk back and forth. Today, you take your portable phone out to the sukkah, someone calls, you want to walk back and forth, you want to think in the sukkah. And then, Shonen, you learn Torah, you study in the sukkah. Well, this last concept you learn in the sukkah becomes a tremendous, I would say, question. What does the Gemara mean? The Gemara questions, answers. Rashi, Tosfot have one girsa, the Rach, and Ran and other Rishonim have another girsa, and Halacha Lemaisa, it can be a terrific difference. What's the question? The Gemara asked, you'll see, look into the Gemara. The Gemara says, no, we have a baraita that learning you do outside the sukkah. And here you just said, learning you have to do in the sukkah. Lo kasha, hod b'migras, hod b'iyune. Wow. One concept refers to learning bekiyut, migras, girsa, the simple level. The other one is depth, chakira, understanding, giving reasons. And Rashi learns pshat, that the simple learning that you do in the sukkah, that you don't have to concentrate, you don't have to be totally involved, you can do it in the sukkah, but when it comes to going deep and analyzing, that you do out of the sukkah if you feel that the fresh air being out of the sukkah that you can do is easier for you, do it outside the sukkah. Very interesting. That's basically the way Rashi, the way Rabbeinu Tam learn. You'll see the other Rishonim just the opposite. Something deep that you have to concentrate. You don't want to be disturbed. That you would close the doors of your house, turn off the phone, not accept calls, don't interrupt. That you have to do in the sukkah, ke'en tadurim. But just going yisa, reviewing, that you can walk around and do, you can do outside, you don't have to totally concentrate. It's all right. It's something more temporary. It's not that you're going to totally seclude yourself. You can be interrupted. That you do outside the sukkah. Total difference of understanding the Gemara. What do we see from here? This takes us back to the whole question at the end of Masechet Brachot. What is more important, Sinai or Ochre Harim? And Girsa means when you can daven up the Gemara. Baron Lichtenstein, he knew all of Shas by heart. Whenever the Rav would get frustrated in Shia, you all know this, every Talmud of Rav from my period tells the same story. Whenever the Rav would get frustrated, the Rav could quote Gemaras, but he didn't remember it al hadaf. And he would turn, nu avu state, where, what Gemara am I referring to? And we would sit there like a bunch of dummies, and the Rav would turn, and Aaron was on the corner there, you saw my picture, all we see is Aaron's hand, but I didn't have any trouble identifying him, because he sat opposite me. And he would turn to Aaron, Aaron Avu State. And Aaron would shoot back at him in the 4 years we sat together. Once in 4 years, Reb Aaron made a mistake. He was off by an amud. He said, I still remember the sugya. It was in Arvei Pesachim, I think it was Kuf Aleph Amud Bet that Reb Aaron said. And the words, the Gemara that the Rav was quoting, were Kuf Bet Amid Aleph. So you see, here, right here, the Gemara acknowledges there are two different ways to go. One way is Bekiyot, one way is Harifot, Sinai, Okaharim, and you see from the Gemara, there's a difference how you approach each one. Bekiyot, no, Mindavan Dab, this is what goes on with the Daf Yomi. The Daf Yomi, in theory, is a fabulous idea. But it's not Rav Meir Shapir, he was the publicizer of it. It's actually, you read the research, it was thought of before him. But he was the one who publicized it, and he deserves the credit because he turned it into a worldwide reality. I have in my office, I have the PhD on Rav Meir Shapiro, I can show you there. was a Rebbe, a Talmud Chacham, a Rav, but he, Rav Meir Shapiro, was a world personality. And he picked it up, and at the Aguda, and he spoke with the Chafetz Chaim. I don't know if you know the story. He spoke with the Chafetz Chaim that he wants to introduce, speak about the concept of a Daf Yomi. And the Chafetz Chaim told him that you're young, I don't know how much you know, in our world, you can't have an opinion till you turn 80. I have to be honest with you, what I'm writing now, I'm writing an opinionated piece on Das Teira. But at my age, Baruch Hashem, I'm allowed. Rav Shach didn't become famous till he was in his 80s. You can go on and on. Rav Aaron Leib Steinman, until he was in his 80s, who heard of his name, etc., etc. So, one second, where was I? Rav Aaron, the piece. Oh, so you introduced the Daf Yomi. Why was there opposition? Until today, you have wise guys who were opposed. If you read the literature, people are cynical, the Daf Yomi. But, all right, there is something to it. Min davin dopa Daf Yomi, like you say, Ashrei. Meshala, if you're going to daven up a Daf Yomi, like you say, Ashrei, what do you know from that Daf Yomi? Rabbi Ruchin Gerelik would shoot you on the spot. All right, Rav Noach Bornstein, he wouldn't shoot you. He'd walk away cynically behind your back, laugh at you. You follow? But on the other hand, Rakefet says, don't oppose the Daf Yomi. Why? Because more people are learning than ever before. Not everyone can give a shiur like the Rav. Not everyone can write a tshuva like Rav Moshe Feinstein. But the fact that they make an effort to learn Daf Yomi, this is an unbelievable achievement. But you see from the Gemara, there's a difference in learning. There's Migras and there's Yune. In our language, Sinai Va'oka Harim. You can call it Bekiyut and Harifat or Pilpul. I would use the word Harifat better. And how do you do it when it comes to a sukkah? How do you do it? What are you chayev to do? Can you do it in the sukkah? Do you have to do it outside the sukkah? And halacha lemaisa, when you look into the achronim, they all paskin lachatchila, you should do everything in the sukkah. We're not such individuals that it makes a very big difference for us to concentrate whether we're in the sukkah or outside the sukkah. We are on a different level. Lachatchila, do all your learning in the sukkah, whether it's bekiyut or whether it's harifut. But there are individuals who will say, you'll take, for the sake of argument, of Chaim Zimmerman. For a person like that, you remember my story with the 9 days. I mean, the story's classic, and I heard it directly from the Talmud, who was Rabbi Dr. Frimmer, who was the one involved with Rav Chaim Zimmerman. You know what the story was. I told the story many times, but you never heard. I'm talking to the new students. So it was during the 9 days. He had a Reb Chaim Zimmerman, Gon Adir, who was kicked out of Europe by his uncle, Reb Baruch Leibowitz, the Kamenetz Rosh Yeshiva. Reb Baruch Leibowitz married to a Zimmerman. It was Reb Chaim's aunt. You follow? So Reb Chaim was a Gon Adir, but he, unfortunately for the European yeshiva element, he also was very broad. He was like a more YU person. He knew science, he knew math. He considered himself a great scientist. He wrote Sfarim on science and religion. And he said, go to America. So he came to Yeshiva Sivas Chalchanan, and later he's the Rosh Yeshiva in Chicago, what you call Skokie. So during the 9 days, he calls his Talmud Norman Frimmer. He was very close to Norman. It's the father of Aryeh Frimmer. There are two or three Frimmer brothers living in Israel. They're all the sons of Rabbi Dr. Norman. So he calls him and he says, Norman, I have to have a corned beef sandwich. So Norman says, Rebbe, you know, it's the 9 days. He says, Norman, you can smoke halai. I'll meet you at the deli at 8 o'clock tonight. And Rav Chaim comes to the deli, walks in with a Baba Batra, and he makes her see him. So Norman innocently asks him, Rebbe, when did you start learning? But it's the biggest Masechet, right or wrong, Baba Batra ain't Kleinekite. Reb Chaim says, oh, I spoke with you at what, 9 o'clock this morning? At 10 o'clock I started learning. All right, so you see, that's a Reb Chaim. The Girsa, he could probably walk in the street and nothing would bother him. He doesn't need but to say, to deal with some of the Taisfat and Cheskat Habatim, there he would have to sit in the Sukh, Dli'iyun, and concentrate. That's according to Rashi. According to the Rach, it's just the opposite. But Tam V'Reach, Ein Lechit V'Keach. And what is... Well, so you see, we're throwing around two concepts here. Here we're talking about sitting in the sukkah, learning. So number one, and I'll give you more sources in the next chuvah. You'll see the next chuvah is Rav Sinigrit. I don't know how to say that in English. It just excites your mind, breaks your mind, excites your mind. What the Shailer is and the Halacha and what the implications are. But what do we see with the Sukkah? So far, you see, there are two concepts involved. Number one, the whole concept of building a Sukkah is Ke'en Taduru. Is everyone hearing me now? Morty, there are no problems? Dove, you hear me? There are no problems? Okay, good. Everyone's shaking that. I'm very happy. Good. Ellie, one concept is Ke'en Taduru. What does Ke'en Taduru mean? The way you live in your house, you have to live in a sukkah. I have to be honest, in my case, I'm pretty good. Outside of sleeping, which there's the factor of I've never slept in a sukkah because I grew up in Alaska, you know, New York, cold, sukkahs. But the East Europeans never slept in a sukkah. Here in Israel, I have simply where my house is located, on the top floor of a building built on Amudim. I'm like the 10th floor up, facing the coldest exposure is where the sukkah is. So it's simply very cold. But okay, outside of that, I have to be honest that in sukkahs, I stay in the sukkah most of the day. I can learn in the sukkah. I can eat in the sukkah. I can talk on the telephone in the sukkah today with the portable phones. It's a different world. But that's Ke'en Taduru. There's no question. I have many grandchildren sleep in the sukkah. They're already Israelis. They grew up here. They live in lower floors. They sleep in the sukkah. So there's Ke'en Taduru. But there's a second factor that comes up. And these two factors are sometimes merge with each other or conflict with each other. What's the second factor? No, so what's wrong if you have to think in learning in depth and it's hard in the sukkah? You can't, you like to walk up and down when you think. So that gives you the right to go out of the sukkah. So of course there's the other principle that's very important and a lot more difficult to circumscribe, to be able to pinpoint, mitzta'er. Mitzta'er is the rubric, that is the magic word which it falls under, mitzta'er. What does mitzta'er mean? That the very being in the sukkah for this particular task causes me mental stress, psychological stress, emotional stress. I'm defining it not bad, emotional stress. I have gemaras behind everything I'm saying, but I don't want to show off my knowledge now. I want to make myself clear. In other words, it's very important for a Rebbe. We have a tendency, I've heard Talmidim of mine speak, when, again, you know my vat, when someone walks away from the talk and you say, how was it? And they say, very profound. That means they didn't understand the word. And the fact that the speaker, the teacher, the Rebbe knows so much, so what? You have to convey. When you came away from the Rav repeated himself and repeated and this way and that way. But he, at Sicha Reingehak, he hit you so hard that you walked away, understanding him perfectly. And that's very important. Mitztaer, so the fact that he can't learn with ease, that he can't learn as he wants to, that he feels this mental challenge, that he feels awkward, that itself could be a ptur from the sukkah. Go out and learn outside. Walk around. Do what you have to. So this is the Gemara. This is the question. This is the machloket. Very fascinating. Very fascinating. This is the machloket. Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam on one side, and the Rach and the Ran on the other side, and this machloket translates right down. You'll see traces of it in the Halacha, in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Ramah, in the Nosei Kelim, a very live, honest machloket. Ein hachinami, you'll see la Halacha, la chatchila, none of us are on such a level that it really harms you that much to remain in the sukkah. Nevertheless, I have to say, if you're Rav Chaim Zimmerman and you want to go through Baba Batra walking up and down and you know it all by heart, say the Rabbi Hirschsprung of, I don't know if I tell you, of Montreal, Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung, knew everything absolutely by heart. Kala Torah Kulo. I know his son-in-law is my Talmud. But I not only have to quote his son-in-law, Sal Newman, I know others who told me, Eidet Nemana, they put a pin in the Gemara in front of their eyes. And he told them exactly what word on every daf that pin fell. And I can tell you here in Yerushalayim, there's a Rav Kohn. What's his first name? It could be Rav Yosh. Shas Cohen, they call him. My son-in-law, very friendly with him. I got to meet him. I got to talk with him. All right, I have to admit, I knew something he didn't know. I felt happy when he displayed what he can do with Shas. He can quote from a Tosfot and tell you exactly what line in Tosfot in the Vilna Shas you will find what he's quoting. You have a mind like that. But Baruch Hashem, I knew a tshuva ha-meshiv dover on the Indian we were talking about, and he got so excited, and he called me the next day to thank me. So I felt, he made me feel like a worm, quoting six lines down, and sure enough, there it was, the words in Tosfot, and Kola Shas Kulo. I mean, it's not just, and by the way, he speaks perfect English. It's amazing. I said, how did you learn English? He grew up here. He never went to school. He never did high school. He went to yeshiva. He said that he won an award for his bekiyot, a trip to Lakewood, from here to Lakewood. So he figured if he's going to Lakewood, he has to know English. So he said in 3 months he taught himself English, what it takes an average Israeli kid 12 years in television and movies to learn a little English. In 3 months he knew perfect English. He actually married an American. I don't think that marriage lasted. It was two different worlds. And then he came back. Baruch Hashem. He found this place here, Shas Cohen. He speaks all over. And now, before the pandemic, I don't know now what the story is, but he would go to Hesda Yeshiva, the more traditional yeshiva. He speaks all over. But you see, this is a legitimate question. Now, watch what our dear Rav Menashe Klein does with this question. He takes it further, and he introduces us to a question that the Achronim deal with. I'll give you the source. It's back to the Shulchan Aruch that we quoted. Tarlat Tafresh Lamitet Hilchat Sukkah Sif Katan Dalid, and look in to the Magen Avraham, look into the Taz. And what is the question? Oh, I love it. Gentlemen, at my age, for me to pick up, for instance, the Torah Vadas volume that came out, 100 years, Torah Vadas, a Talmud in America, got me the volume. I'm very appreciative. I'm going to quote it in the Monday class in a few weeks' time. I can't even lift the volume. I have to get a grandson or a great-grandson to lift the volume for me. It's beyond words how heavy it is. I just finished the volume I quoted in class on Rabbi Sheinberg. So I'll tell you what the story is. I had the same problem, if you recall, Rakafet Aaron Chelik Dalid is very heavy. It's too heavy. Why is it so heavy? Because we had pictures in the volume. I published, there's a whole section there on Russia. In order to publish those pictures and other documents in this fourth section of the volume, it's not that the pictures were all in one place, the documents, that you could have used special paper in one place. In order to do it, we needed good paper that made the pictures come out to their maximum, the documents to their maximum. We wound up doing the volume entirely with that type of chrome paper. It's not any thicker than regular paper, but it's heavier. And if we would have done the pictures on special paper, the rest of the volume on regular paper, it would have been more expensive. Of course, you have to pull out and put in. The volume on Rabbi Sheinberg is the same story. There are pictures all over. No pictures of women. His wife, the tzaddikah, his mother-in-law, no pictures of women, but nevertheless, endless pictures. And the paper makes it very, very heavy. It's a big volume. It's on to 700 pages. New, you know what the shaila that comes up now? If you need Sfarim in your sukkah and it is too heavy for you to carry up the steps to the sukkah, and they always talk about going up to the sukkah. In Israel, it's probably more prevalent to go down to the sukkah. But to carry it, it's too heavy. And you're in the middle of learning. And you know what goes on when you're learning, when you're quoting, when you're checking a Rambam. I have to admit I have a better system today than ever before because I have a one-volume Rambam, the entire Rambam, with a very good editing text. It's based upon Yemenite text. Comes out of Haifa. And what a beautiful piece of work. So I have to admit, it's a lot easier for me when I'm learning because I'm always playing with the Rambam. And here I don't need 10 different volumes of the Frankel Rambam on my desk. I have one volume, I have it all. Tell me, are you Pata from Sukkah? You're busy learning. You have to carry up 5 different, 6 different Sfarim. You already have celebrated your second bar mitzvah like a guy named Rakefet, right, last week. All right, and he drank a l'chaim, good brandy, good lekach, all right, wonderful students. Every year we would drink in class, but this year it had to be done privately, Baruch Hashem, on Shabbos we drank kanayin hara. You can't carry all those volumes. So now, are you Pata from Sukkah? And this, you will see, is a Machloket Achronim. A Machloket Achronim. And there, the Magen Avraham quotes the Levush, this very question. Im Tzarech Sfarim Habei, V'tareyach lo lahalotum l'sukkah. And if this is the case, and he's Pata from Sukkah. Go back to the house, go back to your library, go back where you can learn, go back where you can pull the books out at a moment's notice. You don't have to start schlepping up to the sukkah. You can't carry. You're not chayiv to call your great-grandson, an emergency, Yishai, get here, come here. This is what the Magen Avraham paskins. And look in to the Taz, look into other Nosei Kelim, and they say, no, Lachatchilah, you should have brought the Sfarim up to the Sukkah. You know you're going to use it, bring it up, prepare it. This is not a tour, this is not mitzvah. It's like you prepared the table in the sukkah, you prepared the chairs, everything is there, your bed is there. Ribbono shel Olam, think ahead. No, and what does this remind you of? Who here are good Yerushalmiyim? They say that the Briska Rav Velvo, Friday would prepare all the Sfarim he needed on Shabbos because he was Choshesh for the Shita. We paskin lahalacha bereira levarea on Shabbos is basically an inyan of ochel, that it applies to food. All right. Then there are people who are more machmir. Clothes, whatever clothes you're going to wear on Shabbos, you put aside before Shabbos. The Briska Rav was so machmir that he prepared all the Svarim Erev Shabbos. How many of you have heard this? This is not a secret. Everyone in Yerushalayim knows this. All right? The same way, I'm not paskaling on halacha, chas v'chalila. This is the Briska Rav. He was chayshish for many shita that we let go by because we don't paskin that way. And I don't have to tell you how difficult it is. Who can think what they really need? And imagine if there's a safety you didn't prepare and then you can't touch it on Shabbos. How frustrating it is. Okay, the Briska Rav prepared. Jack, you're going to learn on Sukkos? Get the Sfarim into the Sukkah before. Don't start telling me it's too heavy, it's too difficult. A machloiket achronim. You will see this. Look into the Mishnah Brura and Tarlat, the same Mishnah Brura, and he discusses it right here. Look into subdivision Chavchet, Chavtet, Chlamid, everything we're discussing. Daitom Yushevet Besukkah, or is it better for you to walk? V'yim yesh lo torach rav lahavi sfarim habei lumod besukkah efshad de patur. Achein im yesh lo mokam la nicham sham kol hachag chayav de ein ze tircha. That's the Mishnah Brura. He's quoting the Achronim. Okay, fine, good, fascinating material. Tell me, what's the chiddush? He said he's going to say a chiddush, and he's lehishtateya, to have some fun, to enjoy, to, I don't know, to lighten the atmosphere between him and the blush of the Rebbe. He's going to say a chiddush. Ah, now I'll tell you the chiddush. What's the chiddush? What's this machloket? What are we talking about? To carry up Sfarim? Yes, no. So, Rabbi Menashe Klein says, what are the two factors that we're speaking about? What gives you the concept of the sukkah, what you can do, what you must do, and what you can do outside the sukkah? One concept is ke'ein tadurim. You live in the sukkah like you live in your house. If this is the basic concept, then you're absolutely obligated to carry the sfarim up to the sukkah. In your house, you have the sfarim. Whoever heard of not learning because you don't have the Sfarim are too heavy? This is your house, this is your bookcase, these are your Sfarim, this is where you learn, this is where you take, this is where you bring, This is where you put bang. And if Rakefet can't live up the MTV, the Masifta Torah V'Das 100th anniversary book, so you have your grandson bring it over, or you ask your wife, you carry it together. You can't believe how heavy the book is. I'm not playing games now. At my age, I can't carry it. Wow. But this is your house. Hey, come on, if I didn't read that book, I wouldn't know how to teach about Torah V'Das. All right, I have other sources. But the book, Halavai Reitz would issue a book on its 150th anniversary. Are we there yet? 1886. Figure out, when do we reach 150 years? We're now 120, 134, am I right? 134, Kanayin Hara. Eli and Meisha, start researching and preparing the 150th anniversary of Reitz. Look at the Torah V'Das book. Halavai you could do a job for us. I tell you, beautiful work. That they don't mention YU, that it's odd scroll oriented, etc. Correct. But I'm not here to be critical now. I'm here to say, from their point of view, it is a beautiful work. Okay. Gentlemen, if it's Ge'en Tanduru, don't give me baloney. Let me not hear from Mark Wiener in Chicago that it's too heavy to lift up. In your house, you'd lift the books, you bring them to the sukkah. But there's another concept. Ah, Rabbi Dr. Mark Licht, there's a concept of mitztaher. He's in Brooklyn now. There's a concept of mitztaher. Wait a minute, there's another p'tur from the sukkah. I live in a sukkah, I built the sukkah. But there's a special concept. If you're really upset, if it's really hard, if it really causes you pain, then you're not obligated to lift these books up to the sukkah. Too much for me. Too hard. Too difficult. If that's the case, patur min hasukkah. If mitzta'er is the main factor, not just ke'en taduru, then you're patur from hasukkah. And this is what Rabbi Nasha Klein says, this may be the machloket achronim. This may be the reason those who say you're obligated, ke'en taduru, prepare it in advance, just like you prepared everything else. Those that say mitztaher is a main component of not being in the sukkah, well, the guy is learning, suddenly he needs this Rambam, that Rambam, Meshaket Ayya, Chidushei Rabbeinu Chaim HaLevi. What can he do? He has it all in the house. It's within a minute away from him. He just lifts it out of the bookcase and puts it on his desk, on his table. The sukkah is a big project, up and down and up and carrying. If that's the case, patur. And this is the chiddush, he says. And he says, now, the blush of the Rebbe, see, he doesn't turn him away. If Rakefet had asked the question, I repeat again, he would have said, you are Moritz, you are boor, you ain't, you rake, hate, you rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, hanged, ruthless, depraved, debauched, surreptitious, malevolent, Amoritz. Don't you see it's an open halacha? If the lights go out, go into your house and learn. Don't talk to me about rays of God. That's for tzaddikim, chassidei elyon, not for normative Jews. But the blush of a Rebbe asked the question. Ah, he gives him a beautiful pilpul. I don't know if the Rebbe liked it or didn't, but it's interesting. There's a sideshow to this pilpul that will lead us into the next question. You see, mitztaher is a very amorphous concept. It's flexible and very subjective. What do you mean mitztaher? Someone lives, and remember I grew up in a big apartment building in the Bronx. what we went through to make a bracha in the sukkah and Shabbat, food, how do you get it to the sukkah? No Erev. What are we talking about? You fellas don't start to understand, at least from Tinek, where you from, Aisha?
Whitmer.
Go and try to explain to these gentlemen what life was like. They have an easy, easy lifestyle. Take my word for it. But you have no idea what we went through. The Mesirat Nefesh, to make a bracha, to make Kiddush, to have a Kazayat bread in the sukkah. I remember one of the sukkot we used was an einikel from Hasidic Rebbeim. I don't want to mention more because I'll tell you, if you want to see what life is about, God have mercy on us. An einikel toward that Solanta, I remember his name, I remember what he looked like. And he taka built the sukkah, lived in a two-family house. So we would bring food there, and before we would find out when the sukkah would be empty, when they would finish eating, or before, and we'd make a bracha. It was about a 7-8 block walk from my house. This individual had a daughter, among other children. She was a Ramaz girl, a beautiful girl, and she met an Arab doctor in Israel, married him, lived in the triangle, in the Mishulash, they call it. God have mercy, assimilation into marriage right here in Israel. It's not the only case today. This already is a question of someone rebelling against their entire heritage. But if you take the Israeli scene today, you have an entire element of the population that has no concept of Judaism whatsoever. They're wonderful Israelis, but they're no longer Jews, no longer Jewish understanding. They went to a mamlachti school. They never learned the Pasuk Chumash, never learned the Rashi, never learned the Mishnah or Gemara. You know what goes on here. And these people, we must reach out to. But there's intermarriage. You have Arabs that are very intelligent, very fine, very sophisticated, very westernized, very pro-Israel. It's not a contradiction. And you know what's going on with the Arab party now. This is at the heart of the controversy within. There's a part of the party. It says, what are we? Anti-Israel. We are for Likud. We are for Israel. We want Arab rights, Arab protection. Arabs are being killed day in and day out. You know the news. They shoot themselves there. When they have a fight, they take a gun and shoot you. When their wife looked at another man for the sake of argument, they take a gun and shoot her. It's a lot to be done. But assimilation. But what we went through with Sukkah, no, if you take the concept of Mitztaya, I live on the fourth floor in an apartment building in the Bronx, Washington 80th and 180th. There's no sukkah within six blocks of my house. The sukkah is only open for minutes after davening. Mitztaya. Ein lecha mitztar. Greater than this. Why? How can I have a sukkah? How can I eat in a sukkah? How can it be yotzei anything? You see, if you take the concept of mitztaya and you move it on subjectively, you can wind up that you're never obligated to eat in a sukkah. I can tell you a story. Again, it comes back to me. Rav Schwabin used to say, when a story falls into your head while you're teaching, it's min shemayim. But you talk about mitztaya here. Isn't there a halacha when you're fatumult? How do you say that in English? When you're distraught, when you're confused, when you're worried about something, you're not allowed to daven. It's like someone who's shikur. You're putter from davening. It could even be you're not chayiv to do a hashlamat to the tefillah. You're totally putter. No, how far does that concept go? So I had a very good friend that becomes a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He's my chavruta for many years. Then we broke up. We remained friends, but he wound up in Mir and I wound up in YU. And when he was a kid, he had a crush. He saw this girl in Tritona Park. Turned out that she was the from the big Teitelbaum family, cousin of the Rebbe, big Yichus. And he wrote, I'll never forget this, he wrote a 10-page Chidushei Torah on a sugya in Tefillah. He wrote to the Rebbe, don't want to mention his name already, asking her hand in marriage. The next day or 2 days later, there was a big announcement in the Morgen Journal that she was engaged while she was under 30 days of age. It turned out that this Rebbe had a girl and some other Rebbe had a boy a half year or a year earlier, and the parents made tanoim that when their boy and girl grow up, they will marry each other. So he saw the answer to his request. The Rebbe was very smart. He announced the girl already was spoken for when she was 30 days old. You can understand that. It's the Hasidic world. And by the way, don't laugh at it. Don't be critical. We marry the girl we love. They love the girl they marry. There's a big difference in it. And they have a much higher percentage of success. I don't say it's perfect, but it works much better than our system. We have much more divorce. So you take Mitztaya. I remember when he saw the article, he couldn't daven mincha that day. He said he's distraught, he's Mitztaya, he can't concentrate, he's potter from davening. Well, when you get involved in these subjective matters, you ain't la davar sof. Where do you draw the line? All right. We'll talk about it in more depth. But this is the Chiddush of Rebbe Moshe Klein on this very topic. And he ends off the tshuva. He says, and he explains, just like I explained in class exactly, is Mitztaya the factor? Can Tadura the factor? L'may nafkemina, Mitztaya yapata, you don't have to climb up to the sukkah. Kain Toduru, prepare it in advance. And just like in your house, you'll take the volumes out of the bookcase, go and take them up and out and up now. And he says, if it's Mitztaya, let him go learn in a place where the Sforim are available, in his house, the Beit Medrash, the Shul. But he wouldn't be obligated to bring it up. And look at the way he ends the tshuva. Understand the Derech Eretz for the Blush of a Rebbe. These are the words, Askupa hanidreset lifnei raglei tzadikim velom te Torah lishma, adam mi'ut la'olam, vakesh slicha meha kvod hadag ono kodsho, al hitriach hay tzadik, Amnam ahava makalkelet hashura divrei yudid nafsho biyemet kashur biyavato hamitpalel b'chol yom pamayim levad mitzaharayim la'arichat yom avishonav chayim adei yavo goel tzedek lirushalayim v'atem hadveikim b'ashem kulanu chayim b'lev v'nefesh minasha hakatan ben Rachel Leah. And of course, what he's saying here, he's like the what he called the, not the doorpost, but the part in the door, the threshold. That I'm like the threshold that the great Sadiqi Hadar can step on. I bow before you. I apologize. I'm an adam miut lalam, a small person. I apologize that I asked your great Hadag Ono Katsho, that I was matriach you to look at my divrei Torah. Nevertheless, I love you so much. Ahava makalkelet hashura. And he says, I daven for you. Pamayim biyom. And he adds on, mincha as well. And we should only have arichat yomim shnot chayim adei. We should live until the goal of tzedek comes to Yerushalayim. Va'atem, and you, the Blush of the Rebbe, hadveikim b'Hashem, kulanu chayim, it keeps us all alive, b'lev v'nefesh. And a Hasidic Rebbe, you answer, Menashe HaKatan, and Ben Rachel Leah. That's the way you would sign a kvittel, and that's the way he signs off to the Rebbe. So it's a beautiful tshuva, and it reveals the Hasidic world, the more halachic-oriented world, not Kabbalistic, and it reveals the relationship between Reb Menashe Klein and his feelings towards the Blushever Rebbe. And Ein HaChinami, as I told you when I described the Blushever Rebbe's life, he was one of a kind. All right. This leads us, Me'inyan L'inyan Bo'to L'inyan, but here already what the implications are unbelievable. And what's even more unbelievable, this tshuva was written in 1972, and it's more true today than even in 1972. I just read there was a shootout with sheriffs with in the Wakefield area of the Bronx, and police and what, and many were injured, one was killed. And this is Meissen B'chol Yom in New York. You have a mayor, de Blasio, you take away $1 billion from the police, so you don't have a police force anymore. And the police are not stupid. You got to ask yourself, why risk your life if there's total pandemonium on the streets of New York today? God have mercy. And I asked my wife, where's the Wakefield area? And she said, you were at a Brit there. I said, what are you talking about? That's where Dubi Hartman had his first shtela. It's Wakefield, it's beyond Fordham University. That area of the Bronx was a very nice area then. And I was at the Brit of Dubi's son, Daniel, the oldest son, who took over the Hartman operation today, the Hartman Institute. And that's where I saw Dubi and interacting with the Shlomo LeKalbach. They both knew each other from Lakewood, and I can still see it right in front of me. Dubi looking at Shlomo, was sitting there, and they winked at each other, and Shlomo took out the guitar and started to play. It was a moment in time. Of course, we were all kids. I was certainly a lot, quite a bit younger at that time. When you're my age already, the few years difference doesn't matter. But go and dream what would become of these three individuals sitting there. Look down 60 years later, 65 years later, where they would be in life. You follow? It's fascinating. But that's life, freedom of choice. That's what Schav HaOnish is based upon. All of our religion is based upon that. It's, if there wouldn't be freedom of choice, I don't have to tell you, it's elementary, the Rambam, Shulch HaTshuva. If there wouldn't be freedom of choice, religion is not shayach. Then you're no different than an animal. But when you have freedom of choice, Baruch Hashem, you have a mind, you have freedom of choice, how do you choose, etc. Okay, now, this question... Also, very fascinating, who asks it, and you see, Reb Menashe Klein, independent thinking, totally disagrees with the questioner, and goes on to write quite a long tshuva dealing with the question. Baruch Ato Adonai Melech Olam, She'akol Nehyeh V'Dvaro. And what's the question? Well, you build a sukkah. Yerushalayim, Baruch Hashem, you build a sukkah, no one will bother you. Brooklyn, 100 years ago, 110 years ago, Bensonhurst, East New York, my wife's grandfather would build a sukkah. They lived on the ground floor, and he would build a sukkah outside his house on the street. They would hand the food out through the window. No problem with Shabbos, no problem at all, an attachment to the house. So a policeman would come along and see there's a sukkah, would give him a ticket for building an illegal structure. These are true stories, what I'm telling. Goes to court, you can have a Jewish judge, an Irish judge, an Italian judge. The judge would give him 9 days, 10 days to take the sukkah down. They knew that it was built for Chag HaSukkah. The policeman was ignorant. The judge was more intelligent, obviously. And it didn't matter whether he was Jewish or Italian, and everyone got along. There was never a problem. Goyim would come into the sukkah to look at the sukkah. It was a kinship. Many of the people, I don't have to tell you, you didn't have to be a Jew to speak Yiddish. That was a language that everyone spoke in order to do business, in order to deliver something, in order to sell something. Yiddish, an Italian kid. I know this myself. You know this, the Secretary of State of the United States, what was his name? The black person who had been a force chief of staff, I think, or four-star general. What was his name? Yomo. You know everything. The name of the black, the Negro man. The Afro-American who was Secretary of State for, was it under Clinton or before? I forget already. When he got off the plane to meet Shamir, he spoke here to Shamir, that was his native language. Young.
Powell.
What was his name?
Powell, no?
Powell, correct. What was his first name? Do you remember that? Powell. Anyway. How did he learn Yiddish? Because he worked in the Bronx in a furniture store from the East Bronx. The Jews owned it. He loved Jews. He said they were very nice, fine, honest, good people. But nowadays, you build the sukkah already in the 60s, in the 50s, into the 60s. There was some... Staten Island was the last borough to have a nuclei of frum people. There was one frum Jew there, Ruby Gross, let me recall the name, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, and he fought for Yiddishkeit and built in Staten Island. The Reuven Feinstein's yeshiva began in Ruby's house. When Ruby went in Aliyah, he made his home available to Rabbi Reuven Feinstein. There's a beautiful letter from Rav Moshe to Ruby thanking him. And that's where the Staten Island yeshiva began. Later they grew too big. They had to go to their own property. But it began in Ruby's home. So Ruby used to build the sukkah. All right. Then there were more Jews building sukkahs. And in Staten Island there was some anti-Semitism. People would throw rocks into the sukkah. So the minhag became that they all would build the sukkah in the backyard, not in front of the house. The non-Jews shouldn't see it. So one time, I know to be absolutely true. One time they told the Lubavitch Rebbe, you know, the Rebbe was interested in what's going on in Staten Island. So they told the Rebbe, everyone builds the sukkah in back of the house, except for one person who builds it in front and challenges any non-Jew to say something or throw something, he'll handle it. And the Rebbe says, ah, du meinst Reuben Gross. The Rebbe already knew it had to be Ruby Gross. And the paper said, the Rebbe, you're right, richtig, you're correct. Now, I want to ask a serious question. If you're worried that people are going to throw rocks into the sukkah, no, there's sakana here. This is not simple. Rocks can kill. I have a student who was killed by a rock in Kir Daba in the 70s. Lo Aleinu. In Hebron, I think it was, Lo Aleinu, in Hebron, I think it was, near the Marat Machpelah, he was killed. Rocks can kill. You know, a soldier was killed. They threw a brick down just that's the past year, I believe, a year and a half ago, Lo Aleinu. So, all right, it doesn't kill as much as bullets. Percentage-wise, bullets kill 90% of the time. Rocks kill 10% of the time. But sakonat nefashit is sakonat nefashit. You know what the Brisker Rav said? They asked him, what is considered a sakana? He said, even one millionth is a sakana. Alachat kama v'kama, a rock. If this is the case, maybe you're totally potter from sukkah in New York City, in Baltimore, in any city where you have rampant anti-Semitism. If this is the case, maybe you're totally potter from sukkah, and this is a very serious question. More than that, there's now a sideshow here. to be mevatel a mitzvah taseh, no, you're chayev to observe a mitzvah taseh. It's a question of money. Hamavazbeis, al mavazbeis, yotemi chomish. We're not asking you to do more than a tenth of your possessions, a fifth of your possessions. Moshele, pick up from New York in those years and go up to the Catskills. The hotels were still open on Sukkot. They shut down after Sukkot. Those of you who know the story of the Catskills, they opened generally before Purim. Pesach was major, I don't have to tell you. And today, thanks to the pandemic, people made Pesach for the first time in 20, 30, 40 years. People had to take courses. I saw online courses for housewives how to kosher a house for Pesach. No one is koshered. I mean, it's a terrible thing. It's like no one knows how to kosher a chicken today, all right? We know that. But for that, there's an etzah. We buy kosher chickens. But chas v'chalil, if you don't have the money suddenly to go away or you can't go away, take a look. No one knows how to make Pesach. So now the hotels are open for Sukkot. Why isn't a Jew from New York obligated? Take out of your savings, take out of your pension plan, borrow against your pension, whatever. Come up with a few $100 and go to the Homowak. Go to the Homowak, doesn't exist anymore. What's the story? Everyone's laughing. No, I'm living in the past. I'm a loud one in this tshuva. The 70s. Go up to the Pioneer. What? The Felt Hotels? And what was the famous hotel you have? They were all under kashrut, under supervision. What was the famous hotel in the mountains?
The Granite?
What?
The Granite?
The Homowak, the Pioneer. But there was one, a very big hotel. Kushner's. But there was one where everyone got their start in entertaining. All the famous Hollywood people got their start there entertaining in Yiddish. And it was under Hashgacha too. That hotel was under Hashgacha too. All right. What am I quoting from? Mishnah Halachot, Chelek Vav, Siman Kuf Tet Vav. Now, very interesting who asked the question. The question, 1972. Malat Kvod Yedidi Haitzurav Osek B'chukei Chorev Barkai Ben Shel Kedoshim Evrach Kemishnato Priyetz Hadam Uflam Uflam Bahaflakat Chachamim V'chulu V'chulu Harav Rav Shmuel Aaron Rubin Ben Yedid Nafsi Harav Agoin Atzadek Atmua Misasava Shlita. The question is from the son of the Sasava Rebbe, who evidently later became Rebbe. The Sasava Rebbe should right away tell you it was the original Sasava Rebbe in America was the son-in-law of the Satmaruv. If you recall, the Satmaruv only had girls, and one of his sons-in-law became Sasava Rebbe. He brought the dynasty to America. He survived the Holocaust. And this must be his grandson. I imagine by 1972, it has to be the grandson. Because the Sasava Rebbe, as I recall correctly, the original one in America, died before the Satma died. Now, one second, when did the Satma... No, it could be this is the original one, because the Satma was still alive in 72. He had a stroke in 68. He had a bad stroke, but he died in 79. So it could be this is a nephew of the Satma, a great nephew of the Satma, or a great great nephew of the Satma Rebbe. Now, he writes to him, "You sent me a long quintress that you wanted my opinion." Let me just introduce the question. B'zaken echad shelo asa suka latzmo, an older man, whatever it means, older. I'm chronologically considered old, but when the Yankees start playing again, I'll be very young for at least 5 to 10 minutes a day. I'm not more than 18. Baruch Hashem. When I learn Torah, I'm not more than 21. Okay? I'm still sitting with the Rav. Baruch Hashem. Other times, all right, when Yomo walks me to my car carrying my bags, because they're slightly heavy for me, I'm an old man, agreed. And when I try to lift up MTV book, agreed. Oh, Zaken Echad, an old man that didn't make a sukkah, Mipnei Shemityarei Lalechet Beshuk, Mipnei Halistim Fisha Pugaim, Hamitaplim al bnei adam vegozlim verotzchim mehem. Could you imagine this Jew frightened to make his own personal sukkah because he's afraid to walk on the street, he's afraid to go out, he's afraid to leave his home at certain hours, and what a description. People jump on you, rob you, kill you. Unfortunately, this is true. I have a granddaughter-in-law, a sweetheart from Baltimore, came in Aliyah from Baltimore, married my grandson. Her sister is in Philadelphia. She's in medical school, also married. And she told me her sister was walking in downtown Philly, central Philly, and someone ran by and just pushed her over to the ground, knocked her over, didn't rob anything, kept on running. And they asked her, who's the person, white, was black, who, she didn't even see. She was just, could you imagine? And then I'm told that it's going on all over, it's a new sport, a new game, knocking people to the ground and just running on, running away. God have mercy. All right. And this person didn't build his sukkah. And he's a frum guy. You mavatel sukkahs? Mavatel the sukkah? Sha'al Rav Echad. He asked his rabbi, Upasak lo shehu patur me sukkah. And then the Sasura Rebbe's son or grandson found out, V'kavod malato sha'al mikama rabbanim. The rubam hitnagdu lepsak, v'ketzatam hodulo. You found out about it? You asked a number of your colleagues? The majority said this psak is wrong. You have to build the sukkah. We can't wind up with a total heter for any Jew living in New York, Baltimore, Philadelphia, perhaps Los Angeles today, that you're putter from building a sukkah because they're hoodlums on the street and they'll see you walking. Sakonet nefesh, he's going at night to his sukkah, it's dark. They can jump you, they can hold you up, they can kill you, they can push you over, break your legs, etc. Many said the psak is wrong, and some of the rabbonim said the psak is right. And you, Rabbi Reuben, wrote a long kuntris, and you want me to look at your kuntris and express my opinion. And he says, "V'hagam ki ani tarud l'mala rosh," that I'm so busy. My time is occupied. Me lay the yeshiva. I run a yeshiva. Me lay the kehila. I have a shul. It's all in Borough Park. V'tirda the tzibur, and people are bothering me. Uprat ka'et, and especially now when I'm busy printing the fifth volume of my responsa literature, but nevertheless I put aside some time because I know your family and you were once a student in our yeshiva, and therefore I want to deal with your tshuva. Now, let me end off with just one sentence. You see how sharp Reb Menashe Klein is, and he says, and I saw your long kuntris, and tala atzmo ba'ava avot mazikin. And I saw the kuntris that was written leheter, and you called them ava avot mazikin. In other words, it's a play on words here. It's very sharp that you're citing four different reasons that that original tshuva is not correct. And these four reasons that you're citing are like, you consider them mazikim, that this man doesn't know what he's talking about. And you absolutely, totally refute that tshuva. But I want you to know that I don't agree with you. And even if I would try my best to justify what you wrote, mikomakom lo asa panim bidva halacha. And as much as I love you and appreciate you and admire you and know where you're coming from and know what your intentions are, nevertheless, I cannot show favoritism in halacha. And if I disagree with you, I have to be honest. And v'nireh et asher lefaneinu, let us see what the sources are, what we can derive, what we can say. So you see, my dear students, here is Rav Menashe Klein. He's getting a question that a Rav Paskin for an elderly gentleman. Again, we don't know how old, but it's arcane. In those, let's say in the 70s, if you were in your 70s, you were considered old. Today already it's the 80s that they consider old. Bezrat Hashem, as some of you grow older, it'll be in the 90s you're considered old. Medicine is advancing. Let's see how we do with the vaccines and end this nightmare. But look at Rav Menashe Klein. The Sasele Rebbe's Einikel, he felt there's no heter involved. Many Rabbanim agreed that there's no heter. A minority agreed with the original rabbi who said, you don't have to go to a sukkah, you don't have to build a sukkah. Rav Menashe Klein, with all his love and admiration for the Sasele Einikel, Rav Menashe Klein is coming along and says, Lo esapanim, I agree with the original respondent. And it's going to be a very fascinating question. What is mitzta'er? What is true about the streets? Can you go to someone else's sukkah? Why don't you build your own? What is the sakana? Are you obligated to go up to the mountains? Rav Menashe Klein discusses all these topics. It has a lot of implication. And unfortunately, 40 years later, we're back where we started from. I remember under Giuliani, New York, I remember when I came back during the summer, I was impressed. They made progress. People were not sleeping on the street. People were not panhandling when you stopped for a light. The subway seemed to be safer. And now we're back where we started from, and people tell me it's even worse than before. So to reiterate, what have we accomplished today? All right, we finished out the sugar with the Blushiva. The pilpul of the Blushiva Rebbe, very fascinating. The machloket achronim, carrying the books up or in or down into the sukkah. It's fascinating just to think about it. How do you view it? What is ke'en tadura? What is mitztaya? And this shayla of mitztaya and ke'en tadura, but especially the mitztaya, will play a major role in this tshuva of Rav Menashe Klein. Okay, now I just want to mention again, I have a few, no one seems to take the freebies, but you said to me, where are the freebies? Here is Rabbi Dr. Glatt. He's of Woodmere. You should know him. He's a medical doctor. He's an expert in these type of diseases, the COVID-19. It's his latest predictions of what's going to happen. It's very fascinating. He talks about the current situation. He talks about the vaccines, and Halacha l'maisa, I have a feeling maybe within 2 or 3 months we'll have a much better picture, because they're starting the vaccine in Russia today, and they say Britain is starting shortly, and we're supposed to be getting millions of vaccines within a week or two. So Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll know what's going on. This is the latest Jewish action, speaking with Rabbi Heschel Shachter. It's very nice. It's about his psakim. And you know, Rabbi Heschel is one of a kind. He's a Lamdan Mufak. He's a posek. If I can quote Rakefet to you, he quotes Svarim that the Rav never held in his hands. Understand? The Briska, you talk about the Shol Meshiv, the Achronim. I don't think the Briska went with Shas and the Rambam. And all right, they had to deal with the Nodav Yehuda, they had to deal with the Chatam Sefer. But Reb Heschel is a much wider knowledge, more on the Hungarian style than the Litvish style of Psak. And it's very, very moving for me, because we grew up together. In other words, I was a Ben Bayit in his house, and he was a Ben Bayit in my house. He's my brother's age, he's my brother's chavruta, and for many, many years. And I knew his sister very well. It's really unbelievable, little kids, and what became of us, Baruch Hashem. This is an article from the latest Jewish Life on Joe Karasik. Joe Karasik was one of the big builders of Torah in America. He was a Talmud of one of the earliest Talmidim of the Rav. The Rav started at YU in 41. And the Rav and Dr. Belkin, he was the grandson of a big Rav out in the coast. And the Rav told us that his grandfather wrote to him, quoting Shmuel's mother, the Yelet Hazeh Chikiti, or Yelet Hazeh Hitpalalti. You have to see the exact quote there. That imagine a Rav on the coast, and that period, 30s, has a grandson who's learning Torah and is going to learn by Rav Soloveitchik. And Dr. Belkin and the Rav desperately wanted him to go into the rabbinate. He went into the rabbinate, remained in the rabbinate, and then he got married and married into a well-to-do family where the father-in-law had a big business importing watches. And he winds up in his father-in-law's family. And the Rav and Dr. Belkin were not happy. But he went on to become a tremendous rabbinic lay leader, the OU. He was president and did wonders. A wonderful family, a wonderful individual. And he just died this year, quite on in years, Kanayin Hara. It's a beautiful memoir. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, at 9 o'clock, we're moving into a different world. I never dreamt that I would have to lecture Rabbi Shubau in Israel and ask all Israelis to listen, bring in from Makar Rishon, and bring in from the Alon Amim, and bring in from Besheva. Believe it or not, a conservative rabbi becomes a major player on the Israeli scene that is part and parcel of my blood and flesh. From there, we're moving on to a little bit more material on synagogue council. I'll introduce you to some books and sources. And then, Be'ezrat HaNotein Le'Yov Koach, I open up on Torah Vedas, Torah Mesorah, ultimately Satma, need another year or two, and we'll finish out the history of Torah in the United States, and then we move on, Be'ezrat HaNotein Le'Yov Koach, to pay back what I owe my Rebbeim, the yeshivat in Eastern Europe, beginning with Voloshin and coming all the way through Mir, Slabodka, Telz, etc. And Yomo can testify, I'll do Chachmei Lublin, Yomo can testify, there are thousands of sheets of notes in my office awaiting delivery. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Mori, unmute so the people...
The recording has stopped.
Jack, you asked me a question and I couldn't make out the word. What are they doing in the Knesset was the question?
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
everyone
yeah.
Can unmute.
Yeah, I hear you, Jack.
Okay, it's just... the concepts that the Rav used in terms of sitting together with...
Right. Go ahead.
Can that apply to sitting together, like, for example, in the Knesset with people who...
I can't believe you're asking that question. God should keep us well. In a week or two, I will reach it in dignity. It's all in my notes. I'm dealing with it. Believe me, I'm furious about something that was published and printed. The Amratzit Chogeget, and how come there's no rebellion in America that you let Gedolei, so-called Gedolei Yisrael, publish such shtuyot? But I better keep quiet or I'll be put into chayrim, so I button my lips. But your very question is my very question, but we'll get there. Okay, I'm glad I understood you, because on the telephone, that word wasn't clear, and I thought you said Knesset, but I wasn't positive. Okay,
Rebbe, you mean the Akkadah statement that they issued about the Rebbe Zionist organization?
Well, that's exactly right. We'll get there.
I saw that.
Okay, that's beyond belief that you can say something.
They've been sitting in the Knesset since 1948.
No, it's worse than that. If you're teaching Gemara, you have to know a Rashi. Medav Sogim Pshat and Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, the Rash that I quoted today. But your mind has to work properly. What's with them? But you'll hear what I have to say. We'll get there. Okay, you read my mind, but give it time. Anybody else have a question?
Another question?
Yeah.
Look at the Tshuva to the Blazhev Rebbe. Doesn't tell him what to do. He gives him both points of view.
In the first part of the Tshuva, take a look at it again and understand it between the lines. In the first part of the Tshuva, if he was writing to Rakefet, he would have said, "You are an Amoret Sabur and everything I said 5 minutes ago." But here, all he does, he quotes the Shulchan Aruch. And he says, that should have solved it. But since the belligerent Rebbe, I'm going to have some fun. I don't know how to translate it, but we're going to dance around. We're going to rejoice. We're going to joke back and forth on this sugya. And that's what he does.
But he's very polite. He doesn't tell him what to do.
Halacha lemaisi paskind in the first few lines. But your father, you got to read between the lines. But he's not writing to me. He's writing to the Blue Shiva Rebbe. If you had written to me, it smacked my face. What kind of mercy is an open psak in the Shulchan Aruch? What are you looking to the Mishnah Berurah? You need me? No, but you see, the Blue Shiva Rebbe felt, I'll tell you, he couldn't ask Reb Moshe the Shaila. Because Reb Moshe, the Hasidic overtone sitting, and it's like I described, my Talmud saw the Hanukkah lighting at a Rebbe. And he asked me, he says, Rebbe, they lit, they sang, and then the Rebbe sat there in silence, his eyes closed, facing the Hanukkah candles, and all the Hasidim looked at the Rebbe in awe. What's going on? What did they see? You follow? The Rebbe was absorbing the rays of the Hanukkah. I don't understand it. I mean, I wouldn't do a thing like that. The Hanukkah candles, to say, learn Bamei Madlikim, learn the Sugyan Shabbos, I don't know, do a scholarship, I don't know, play chess maybe, but Hasidic Rebbe, he looked at it and absorbed. So you can't ask a shaila like that of Reb Moshe, but Reb Menashe Klein, who does have some Hasidic background, I'm positive he davens with the Gatel. Mark Licht, will you go to the shtibble and observe your son and tell us whether he davens with the Gatel or not? All right. From him, he expected a more Hasidic answer. But you saw Reb Menashe Klein dealt with it on a purely halachic, litvish basis. That's the psak. But if the Blazhev Rebbe is asking me, I want to make him rejoice, and you can reject my chiddush or tell me it's, you know, accept it. I will lie on the floor. You can walk over me. What? You see the atmosphere. You see the surrender. You see the covered. Wow. That's chiddush. In the Rav Shir, you never felt this way. The Rav, I don't know if David Tversky, in your time you got this feeling, but the Rav, don't agree with me because I said it. Only agree with me if you think I'm right. And he encouraged you. You had to think, and you could disagree with him. You could disagree. I mean, imagine you could disagree with the Rav. I mean, we had Talmidim who spoke back to him, you know, and Halacha and Chumra and Kula, right down the line. And he never got upset. If you thought properly and had sources, fine, you're entitled to your opinion. It was an amazing experience. I was privileged. I hit the Rav at his absolute prime. You have to understand there's a certain development it takes. You're a teacher, you're a Rebbe, you're NYU. But by the mid-50s, he was the Rav. RCA, Halachic Commission. And he came across with us. Again, we were kids. How much we appreciate him, how much we understood him. We were in awe of him, that's for sure. But wonderful Rebbe. It's written very well, you know. He had a problem dealing with students because he had never gone to a yeshiva. And many Talmidim, who I know from an earlier period, my period, later when the Rav died, they said, if only we could have told Rebbe, we love you. It wasn't just a Talmud-Rebbe relationship. It's much, much deeper. You sow the Torah Shabbat Prah. Let me be honest with you. The letter that I used due to advice from my students in the Kollel as the introduction to the Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein called that letter the most important letter he ever saw written by his father-in-law, by Rebbe. And look at that letter and analyze it. I should spend a year on it like a good chassid explaining the letter and all the sources behind every word. But look at that letter and you'll understand the Rav, you see, and the relationship. And to a certain degree, we missed out on not saying to Rebbe, Rebbe, we love you. We want to be Gedolei Yisrael, you know. You know, we don't understand you entirely. Later, due to tragedies of life, the Rav became more understanding of the masses, of the human being. But when we were with the Rav, it was yet Reb Chaim Zainikel coming down on American kids who were various backgrounds, knowledge, abilities. It took a while for him to master the fact that not everyone is like the Soloveitchik, and a Rebbe has to understand that and reach out to everyone. Later in life, I have to tell you, the Rav, when Reb Aaron Cutler died, so the Rav off the cuff was talking with people in Boston. And then they asked him between Mincha Maariv and Shabbos, would he say a few words about Reb Aaron Cutler? So he's very pensive. He was thinking, and he said, you know, there were many similarities between us, but there were also big differences. And he said one of the differences was when Reb Aaron taught, he taught the Mitzuyanim. He knew about the Zalmi Shurim, and Reb Aaron, you have to understand, no one followed him after the first 10-15 minutes outside of Reb Yankel Lishif and people on that level. He said, when I teach, I try to reach everyone. And that already, you could see the Rav had absorbed what teaching is about and students and reaching out and passing on the Mesorah. It's a very true insight and concept. With all his Yirat HaKavod for Reb Aaron, but it's a very insightful statement, the difference between them. I'll tell you another secret that not many people know, because B'didi have these ears, you know, again, what's the Art Scroll may or may not accept this, but this is an absolute fact. I was very close to Reb Shneur Cutler when I learned in Lakewood. It was a Mamish Ben Bayit. And the Rosh Yeshiva's son was let down his hair, his wife, they were very down-to-earth people. And he told me, when he came back from learning by Rabbi Zalman, his grandfather, an Eitz Chaim, so Rabbi Aaron, this was in the late 40s, or it can be checked out, maybe it's early 50s, and Rabbi Aaron told him to go to the Rav Sheyurim and to hear the Rav. And I asked him, what type of impression? And he said, oh, it was wunderbar. He praised the Rav Sheyurim. He said, my only negative comment is that the students weren't dressed, you know, he was amazed at the class without, I don't know, without ties, with open shirts, with only Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein later in my time, he was the only one who wore a jacket. You look at the picture, you'll see, there's Abba Brandspiegel in a sweater, and a colorful shirt. We didn't have this concept, but you know, today it's a different world. I've told you, all you guys have beards. I'm the only one in the room without a beard. Tomorrow it'll be a whole group of guys. They all have beards. I'm the only one in the room without a beard. But we were a different generation. Our entire being was burning with love of Torah and Yerach Shemayim. Entire being. You know, understand? Because they had to rise out of nothing, but the world was around us. Ah. Baruch Hashem! You have it wonderful. Woodmere, Teaneck, you can't even start to understand the Shaila like this. The Bronx, Goyim. Okay, any more questions? We got to clear out of here because another class is coming in. This is a very formal program. Grusin Yerushalayim. Okay, I want to thank everyone for your kind participation, joining me across the world. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das V'danya. Shavua Tov U'mevorach, and tomorrow remind me to wish you a happy Hanukkah. Okay, Chag Orim Sameach.